Hello, everyone. This is Jerome Parker, the host of the Code Life Podcast, aka Master Shake. And today we have a special guest, Jason Blanchard, who's going to be talking with us about what he has going on, and we're just going to shoot the shit and talk some code. How are you doing today, Jason?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on, Jerome.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. Well, why don't you give us a brief introduction of who you are?
Sure. Yeah. So, my name's Jason. I am a senior software engineer currently at a company called Employee Cycle, a really small, early stage startup, automating HR analytics processes for HR companies. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Nice, nice. And where are you? And where is this company based? Or are you remote? Where are you based?
So I'm in Philadelphia. The company is, everyone on the team is in Philadelphia, but we are currently officeless, like most other people. So we are effectively a remote team right now.
Awesome. Awesome. So you are a senior software engineer. So How long have you been, coding?
That's a good question. Yeah. So I have been writing code for maybe just around 10 years, depending on how you define it. I have a bit of a circuitous route to do what I do. I am completely self-taught. I have no formal instruction in software engineering. I did not go to school for computer science or anything like that. I actually went to film school, which was, maybe a good idea at the time. I don't know. So I did that, and I liked the work. I liked the creativity of it, but I didn't really like the industry. I worked in industry for a little while, saw a lot of people move out to LA, be very successful doing that, decided that wasn't for me. I was a little aimless after school, and then ended up going to grad school and studying education technology, which if you ask 10 different people what that means, you get 10 different answers. The program I was in was a little research based, which wasn't for me, but fortuitously I ended up getting a job at the academic computing instructional media lab, helping professors kind of do technology things. And that was kind of my first, that's where I learned like what's an FTP server. You know, like what does it mean to like, you know, how do these things work? And so that was kind of the first place. I wasn't programming per se, but I was sort of like, that's where I kind of got into the sort of technology things. And then, yeah, jumping ahead a little bit, I ended up getting a job at Drexel University working in an IT department, which again was just like fixing laptops and deploying printers. That's where I really learned. I sat next to a system administrator, became friends with some really talented software engineers that worked at a place called the Drexel Math Forum. They showed me that, you know, that's where I learned what a stand-up was. I learned how to, what does it look like to manage a software engineering team? What does it look like to, a good mentor of mine, Amir, helped me write my first program, which is a bash program a CLI for creating tasks that I did throughout the day and then emailed them all to my manager at the time, which was sort of eye-opening for me. So that was my first experience writing code, which was about 10 years ago.
Nice. Okay. So you said a lot of interesting things that I want to touch upon.
Sure.
So let's first off start with the fact that you're self-taught.
Yeah.
I can definitely empathize with. I'm also a self-taught developer. But you said that you went to film school at first. So I think it's very interesting because my best friend, he's also in tech, but he does film, and he's an independent, independent filmmaker. And I've noticed that in tech, there's a big crossover between content creators and engineers. So how do you feel like having a creator mind going into tech influenced how you went about going into tech?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I've noticed that too. I think for me, what, and I did not know this going into it. So I know if I went back and if I started out school as a computer science major, I know I would not have been successful. It would not have been interesting to me. I know I would not have been good at it. I think I needed to come at it organically. And I realized in doing that I feel like software engineering, the kind of software engineering that I do in web, you know, web SaaS companies, is a lot more creative, I think, than I ever thought programming was. You know, like what we're doing is we're building systems that help people solve problems. And you got to understand what the problem is. How do you translate that problem into computation, which is not like, you know, most of it is not finding, you're not designing algorithms. You're not building data structures. You're sort of standing on the shoulders of giants who have sort of invented all those kinds of things and fitting them to a problem that real people have. And that to me is, yeah, exactly. And that to me is a more of a creative endeavor than it is a mathematical one. Yes, we're doing it with computation, which has its roots in math, and you have to kind of understand that. But it is a lot more creative and fun to me in a way that I didn't understand until I got there.
Yes, I feel especially when you get to senior and lead engineer, programming really becomes a hybrid of art and science.
Yeah, it is.
Especially, you know, when like a lot of these things that we're making have never been made before. So it is very creative and abstract driven.
Yes.
I was a college dropout. Like, you know, I'd already been coding I started coding when I was 8. So when I was a freshman in college, I'd already been coding for 10 years. So I was bored, you know, and I dropped out. But I do remember one of my favorite professors, Dr. Kenneth Calvert, he used to say that computer scientists are abstraction engineers. Like everything is done in a, like we're quantifying qualitative properties. And that is, that is in more times than not, more easier said than done.
Absolutely. And it's awkward. It's not natural.
Yeah, you feel like the person who came up with a merge sort and quick sort and stuff like that are non-intuitive but end up being like the most efficient. Like I'm sure they felt weird coming up with it because it doesn't link up with how the paradigm of how our mind works in this materialistic world, trying to make it binary. So if you know, people often talk, you know, there's a stereotype that, you know, we're just the nerd sitting in the dark room with the green text on the screen, but there, if you're not creative, you can really, that to me, that's between an engineer and a programmer, right? So if you're not creative, you can just follow instructions, you can write algorithm given a predefined set list of parameters, right? But you know, if somebody's telling you if I can sit you down, tell you an idea, I'm non-technical, but you can visualize what I'm saying. Screen, that's the difference between an engineer.
Absolutely. So, I totally agree. Totally agree with that. Yeah. And I think, you know, the other thing I think that has parity with content creators too is it's also, I feel like software engineering is also a very collaborative experience.
Very.
Like you're collaborating with your team, you're collaborating with other disciplines, you're collaborating with your customers. And that's something like, to me, when I was in school working on film and television projects, I use the same skill set, right? Like it's the same thing. Like how do you align a team and motivate a team to create something? You could do that with movies, or you could do that with software. Like it's actually very, very, there's a lot of parallels there.
I mean, and now we're at the point where people are making whole movies using like Unity and stuff. The literal and philosophical merging of technology and creation it's almost indistinguishable. But we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and we're going to talk a little bit more with Jason about the content creator community and tech, and I'm going to pick his brain. So we'll be right back. Sometimes you just want a gourmet meal. Sometimes you just want a home-cooked meal. You don't want fast food, and you don't want the same thing over and over. Sometimes you want to cook, but you have no idea what to make. And this is where my app and latest startup, Mobi Snacks, comes into play. Mobi Snacks is a mobile app that connects you with local chefs in your neighborhood, so you can get gourmet, local, cooked meals. Anyone can sign up to be a delivery driver, and anyone who's eligible can sign up to be a chef. And what's more is that there is Mobi Snacks TV, a service with live stream and pre-recorded cooking shows made by content creators who also are chefs just like you. If you want to get started, head over to mobisnacks.com and click the link on iOS or Android to take you to the respective app store. Once again, that is Mobi Snacks, MobiSnacks. If you enjoy this podcast, consider becoming a patron on Patreon at patreon.com/MasterShake08. By becoming a patron, not only are you supporting the brand, but you're also funding the Code Life Initiative, which is a program where my company, Jake Pierce Solutions, teaches kids for free how to code in inner cities. We're trying to expand this program across the 50 states, and we are trying to do this self-funded so we can do it in the direction that we best see fit. So please consider becoming a patron. The levels start at $1. Patreon.com/MasterShake08.
Tired of doing technical interviews and rounds of them? Triple Byte is a platform that allows you to take one technical interview and have companies such as Apple, Microsoft, and Facebook bid on you for a job. Click on the link in the show notes to get started for free. It is always free, and offers will come to you in your mailbox. Click to get started.
And we are back here with Jason. So, more about the content creator. Content creation and, you know, tech influence being, now I am a content creator and a software engineer, and you come from a content creation background and a senior software engineer. So traditionally, you know, we're starting to see a flip in the perception of the engineering society, right? The perception of the nerd overall. Mm-hmm. Back when we were in high school and stuff, you know, we ostracized. Same thing with anime is cool all of a sudden, but back then, you know, people didn't really jig with it. You were seen as outcast. It wasn't cool, you know. Kids look up to athletes and entertainers, but you don't really see people looking at engineers. But now, especially with the Gen Z, you're starting to see people like, you know, people like Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey. Mm-hmm. People will be like, I mean, the tech celebrity is a thing now. Mm-hmm. And that is like up there with like A-list. Like, you know, you're seeing rappers and stuff like taking pictures with Jack Dorsey and like, you know, be like, oh man, I'm going to see on Twitter. Like that's but no, I mean, like, you know, real shit though. So,
yeah.
And couple that with like just how media has transformed over the last decade, like it's going from more of a centralized approach, like everybody was watching stuff on ABC or whatever, to, you know, going to influencers and content creators. So now platforms like YouTube and Netflix and Amazon, Disney Plus, like, you know, the, like it's platforms with the individual content creators, you know, adding more stuff. Still a heavy influence with the mainstream, you know, movie and television. But the flip is starting to happen. And once again, especially with Gen Z, you know, more people want to follow people on TikTok and YouTube than they want, than they are, you know, how many Gen Zs and millennials have a cable subscription? You know what I mean?
Right.
So, do you feel that, where do you feel tech entertainment going? And let me define what I mean by that. So like when I do like my my courses, you know, I'm like I do my coding courses, and I'm writing doing a live stream, writing an app or something like that. Like the biggest selling point for my brand is my charisma. You know, I'm very interactive with my audience. You know, I like to do giveaways and stuff like that. It's not just me sitting on the screen coding. Before they start really clamping down on audio copyright and stuff, like I used to live stream music and stuff. People just, a lot of people say they just come in, put my channel on another tab and just listen to the music while they work, and I'm cool with that as well. But so where do you feel tech entertainment going? As we're more and more engaged with apps and stuff, like what do you see our influencers? Do you see there's going to be more tech influencers doing content creation, or do you feel it'd be more like just direct, the more of what it already is, just with more tech in it?
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting question. I think, I mean, what I hear from what you're saying, what's working for you is you're meeting people where they are, right? Like people, you're leveraging a medium and a way of connecting people that feels familiar, maybe. And that's really effective, right? Because like this stuff that we're doing, learning how to build software is very intimidating. Or, well, I don't know. Let me rephrase that. They're sort of like, it's actually relatively easy to start, but it's a hard thing to continue. Right, like there's ways to get immediate wins that feel really good, like you Rails knew your project, or you spin up the WordPress thing and it feels great, but then you run into a problem and it gets hard. and there's also just like a lot of stuff. There's like, what do I learn? Do I learn this language? Do I learn that language? Which framework? Should I use a relational database? Should I use a object store? Do I use AWS or GCP? Like there's so many, the decision fatigue is real. And I think that's where resources that help scope people's learning is really effective. And if you can do that in a way that is fun or familiar, that reduces some of the cognitive load to continuing there. And so I wonder if that's part of that. I mean, the other thing, it sounds like what I'm hearing too is like that's fun and familiar and comfortable for you, like, right? Like that's how you found your voice in this world. And people, I'm sure that resonates with people. They're like, oh, like this guy isn't just some stuffy professor who's trying to weed me out of the class. Like, no, like this guy is like real and likes the same music that I do and, you know, looks like me. And so I'm more apt to continue down this path.
I like that answer. Let me ask you a question about tech literacy for a moment. Okay. So we have, we're in our society, you know, like pretty much everyone has a smartphone, whether it's, you know, Android or iPhone, like they have a smartphone. And everyone knows how to download these apps like TikTok. They may even know how to effectively use them in terms of like growth, you know, how to use the hashtags and stuff like that, right? But not very many people are very tech literate when it comes to things like security, when it comes to things, you know, or just knowing, like, if you're able to do customizations, but you don't know how to do the customizations because you just don't, you don't even know what a CSS hex hex code is, you know, like, so, what do you see, where do you see, the society in the next, over this next generation, as the number of people and interactions increase, but while the number of engineers kind of stays stagnant, because we're not seeing a big, we're not seeing a huge rise in engineers. There's literally millions of unfulfilled jobs. And everybody's got to start. And everybody's, you know, like, we're all fighting for the same engineer. Especially it's the senior lead engineers. There's, like, literally only a few hundred thousand.
And then you get into, like, the pool of people that actually want to, like, manage engineers. Great question. And, you know, it's funny that you say that, too, because I was thinking as you were saying that, like, I think a lot of us got our start in, like, customizing our MySpace pages, you know, or like, where you're like, that's where you learn the CSS hex code, right? You want to make your background, you know, red or something like that. So first of all, I think at some point, what was the guy from MySpace who had the little picture with the white shirt on? Tom. And the crew and his team realized how insecure all of that stuff was, locked it down. But then you also see, like, the app store channels have sort of doubled down on that, right? Like, you literally need a license to ship those kinds of things. Like, there's a higher, greater barrier of entry. In a lot of ways, which I think is interesting, and maybe discourages, but I don't know. I feel like still people are really curious about that. Let's see, I had a thought and it just left me. So I think that there is a certain level of, like, so, okay, I remember I was connected to back what I was saying before. So I think part of it is that the we need to, like, rebrand the entry points into this a little bit. Like, I think, like, I know for me, one of the reasons why I entered this field kind of late was because I didn't know anything about it. Like, I thought that to become a computer programmer, you had to be a computer, you have to go to school, become a computer scientist, you had to be really good at calculus, and I wasn't, and so that path was not available to me. That's how I thought about it in my head. But then, like, if I had been able to see people like yourself making videos and saying, like, no, like, this is what it looks like to be a software engineer, this is the kind of stuff that we do, and it's fun, I would have been a lot more curious about that sooner. And so I think part of it is, like, the, is making the entry points a little bit more accessible and visible to people, is a big part of that. Especially because it actually doesn't require that many resources to try it out. Like, you have to have a computer, right? That's a high barrier of entry. But other than that,
I mean, like, even with that, like, when I started learning how to code, I literally was walking to the library. Like,
yeah, sure.
I didn't, you know, like, you know, so, like, you know, it's not the barrier of entry is not going to be the same. You know, some people have the resources and some people don't, but the good thing is that literally, you know, tech every year gets, like, cheaper and cheaper. And we're at the point now, like, people learn how to code on their smartphones. Mm-hmm. So there's way more available options. Like, when I first started coding, I started coding in 2000. Git didn't come out to 2005. You know what I mean? Apps I lost in those 5 years. Like, you know what I
mean? Just emailing yourself the source code.
Man, I still have floppy disks. I didn't get my first GNOME job to like 2002. Like, you know, like, lots of stuff. So, you know, and I'm sure in 10 to 20 years, it'll be even easier than it is now to like get, you know, to like get, like, you have MIT and Stanford classes on YouTube. Like, I don't know where I would be if I had that when I was in 2000 when I was 8. Like, man, like, go ahead. Go ahead.
I think, like, thinking about that too, like, I feel like a lot of it is just sparking people's curiosity, right? Like, so that they feel like they want to watch that for some outcome. Like, I remember, I have such a distinct memory of being in whatever, fifth or sixth grade, and learning about prime factorization and really struggling with that. Like, I don't know, I don't get this. Like, this is really hard for me. And I just don't understand why I'm doing this and what it means, right? Fast forward, 20 years or something like that. And I realized, like, oh, all of modern cryptography is based on the fact that prime factorization is hard, right? It's hard for computers to do. And if someone had just kind of like pointed that out along the way, like, and like sort of empathize, like, yeah, this is hard. And you know what? Like, it's hard. There's something fundamentally hard about it to the point where computers aren't really even that good at it. And so, like, I feel like it's stuff like that, like just kind of like exposing those little things to people at the right point where they're like, oh, that's interesting. I want to learn about that. And then you get to the point where, like, I'm not doing math for math's sake, or I'm not learning these things, computer science for computer science sake. I'm learning these things because I want an outcome, right? I'm learning these things. I'm learning something because I want to send secret messages to my friends and I don't want the teacher to read them. Like, that's just a more interesting way to think about that than just sitting there and factoring numbers.
I remember when I was, you know, I was learning how to code. I was following the book, and I got the first, you know, code to compile with like some minor customizations. This is still console text coding, nothing visual yet. And, you know, I remember that feeling of like, oh wow, like, this is really cool. Like, it's almost like a superpower, right? And then I remember when I did my first video game by myself. No tutorial, and like, it ran, and like, I literally felt like a god. Like, it was like, it was really like, you know, disclaimer, I smoke a lot of weed. This is like, you know, this was the most intense high that I've ever felt was when I saw my video game run, right? I was like, I was shaking for like days. Like,
adrenaline.
I can do anything. It's a straight adrenaline, right? Like, I felt that I was 9 years old. This was like shortly after my 9th birthday. So, like, you know, it's cold, it's winter, middle of January. And, that feeling, like, I teach, I don't know if you saw or followed that, you know, I'm teaching children how to code. My company, we started an initiative, whatever. So, like, my whole life, I've always said I want to teach kids because I want to see that feeling in them. I want to get that feeling in them. And like, if that feeling is what sparked my trajectory, what, you know, really kept me going. Because before, when I was learning how to code, like, it was a cool hobby. I still didn't understand what computer science was, what software engineer was. Like, you know, I just know, I can make little cool. My whole purpose was to make games. That was literally why I learned how to do this. Exactly. So, like, when I actually made that game, it literally, before making the game, the height of my existence for coding was making a game. Once I made that game, the ceiling shattered, and I literally felt like I can literally do anything. Literally. Like, school forever changed for me. Like, I literally stopped caring. Like, I've always been in a pursuit of knowledge. But, like, I stopped caring about my grades.
Right, because you realize this other thing. You realize, like, if I can understand this, I can make things.
Exactly. And I used to code my homework. There was a period where like all my homework was coding. You know, I have to show my work. Okay, bet. I'll print out the text, copy. Like I didn't have time. I don't have time for biology. I'm trying to learn cryptography. Like
that's hilarious.
So and even then, like money was never like I didn't realize how much my skill set was worth until like I was in college. Like I already had a business. I started my business when I was 14. So I had a business while I was in college. And like looking back, I realized why I have so much business because I was undercharging, like a mother. Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm like, $50. All right, cool. I got you. Like, you know, I don't care. Like, it was about the love for me. But then when I realized, oh shit, I should have charged $5,000. Like,
yeah,
they would have gladly paid it. Like, that, you know.
So, yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
That's kind of the blessing and the curse of I feel like people like us who write software as a job and a passion is that it's like it's great because work doesn't really feel like work, but then it's also really hard to turn work off. You know, my wife will ask me like, are you doing work right now or fun right now? And I'm like, I don't know anymore. It is the same thing.
My girlfriend's the same way.
But you know, it also to tie it back to the first part of the conversation about creating content, like that's another parallel. Like you hear people talk about songwriting, or writing books, and I feel like I've heard very similar experience to yours writing that game, where it's just this intense period of concentration and flow. And then you ship a thing, you send, you record your song, and there's like a euphoria around it. And I think that is a very, very similar experience doing what we do.
Facts. Well, I think that is a good note to close out on. So before we close out, what do you have going on? What are your few? Do you have any side projects? Anything you want to plug?
Oh gosh, yeah. I always have side projects, but nothing that will ever see the light of day. I've been writing the same journaling app for like a couple years now. But it's just an excuse to have a thing that I ship to production that I actually use, and if I break it, it's gonna bother me. So nothing really I wanna promote right now. But yeah, I'm really focusing, like I said, like I just joined this new startup called Employee Cycle. And I'm really pouring a lot of my energy into that. So I think that would be the only thing worth plugging right now.
All right. Where can people follow you on social media?
You know, that's funny. I have been off social media for a while now as a bit of a mental health thing. But I would say probably the best place to reach out is maybe, it sounds really corny saying this, but LinkedIn is probably the only one I check these days. My email, jas.blanchard@gmail.com. Happy to chat with anybody about anything.
All right. I'll be sure to put links to both of those in the show notes. Do you have me?
Oh gosh. I'm curious about your next live stream for when you're actually writing code. I love people watching people build software, so I want to watch that.
Yeah, I was actually trying to figure out what day I want to do that. Probably it would be Monday or Tuesday of next week. Mobile app,
nice.
Doing some API stuff, full stack.
Nice, cool. Well, I will be sure to tune into that.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of CoLife. It is your host Jerome Parker, aka Master Shake. Once again, everyone, thank you. If you want to sponsor this podcast, you can do so on Anchor, or you can head over to our Patreon. That is patreon.com/MasterShake08. And until next time, we'll talk to you all later.